check, please. CQ, KO4, LAO, signal check, please.
CLX, mobile, monitoring.
Cool, say again your call sign.
Charlie, Lima, X-ray, go ahead. 6 Charlie, Lima, X-ray, monitoring.
Charlie, Lima, X-ray, KO4, LAO.
Is it IO? Is it K4 IO? Go ahead.
Kilo Oscar, Kilo Oscar 4, Lima Alpha Oscar.
That's as bad as mine. KO4, Kilo Lima, KLO. Got it.
It's Kilo Oscar 4, Lima Alpha Oscar.
You know what? I'm just going to remember you by almost a Leo. L-A-O. I got it now.
So hard to remember, even if you've had it for a while.
Bobby, a lot of guys would like to, they had no such thing as vanity calls back then, but they, a lot of guys would make up names for their last three or two. But I came, showed up with CLX, and boy, that everyone was stumped. No one knew what to call it except Clorox.
Well, mine's pretty new, and it's taken me a little while to keep from getting tongue-tied with it. But there's a lot of KO4s out here in this area, which I think is where the way the FCC assigns it. The Lima Alpha Oscar gets mixed up with the KO part.
CLX righty. I'm sorry, but that's kind of that'd be a tough one on CW.
Not far yet. I'm actually out here walking on an HT, walking with an HT up here north of Traveler's Rest. Jim's the name.
Looks like I'm going to be here for a while. Business 85 over here in Spartanburg is just gone to zero.
Guys earlier this afternoon said that it was pretty clogged up out that way. I don't know if they have a wreck or is it normal evening traffic?
I have all of a month and a week of experience with it, but this is new to me.
There you are, just new route that you're taking coming home.
Jim, it's just a new job. Worked the last 5 years out of the house. Been here since 07.
Summer of 06, so we've been here about the same time, same area. But, congratulations on the new job.
Yeah. I needed to find one, but I got it.
This afternoon, it was so nice out, I couldn't sit in the house, so I decided to get out and go walk on the rabbit trail here. Leo.
4 LAO N6 CLX. I was just looking at the phone trying to figure out how bad this is. Looks like it's a couple miles.
Too bad. Sometimes it'll unclog, but I don't envy you sitting there in traffic, that's for sure.
Putting some quarters in for the future for me. Maybe I could be sitting here or getting in trouble on 85, I don't know.
It is absolutely gorgeous out here on the rabbit trail, and lots of folks out taking advantage of the nice temperature and weather.
I'm loving it. I'm staring right at the sunset. It's nice.
It's a unusual for this time of year, really.
A fellow in Ohio today, and he started out by saying, "So how are things down there?" I said, "Well, I hate to tell you this, the temperature. Yeah, it's a beautiful day here in the 20s."
get an early frost or an early freeze here like we have had in some years, you know, killed off all the buds and things, and then we were without flowers and leaves for an extra month or so. How's this signal sound from here?
It sounds like a typical HT. But the signal's full quieting, picking up, I guess that's road noise or something, but no, it sounds good.
Actually out here on the highway here, I guess it's 276, going through Traveler's Rest here, but you can almost see the season set from here, but not quite.
Right on my Chinese mobile, my VTEC. Tell you what, can't beat the price of those things.
My son got me one of these Baofengs several years ago, and it sat in a box for the longest time, and he finally said, Dad, you need to go take your license. So last month I went out and knocked out the technical and the general, and started using that, but upgraded to, so I've got a couple of Yaesus I got for the VHF band, and they work really good.
Options on your ticket, that's great. Yeah, I just, I put it off for years and thought I'd never make it, but late last year I went ahead and took my advanced and passed that.
I'm trying to get an HF rate going here, and, you know, between the watt size of the antennas and what bands you want to operate or what frequencies you want to operate on, trying to figure out an antenna, that's a bit of a puzzle.
Over my head on with your call and CWs, that's an awful lot of DAWs.
I have not gone down the CW road yet, but that is one of my goals. I really would like to learn that.
It's been years and years and years since I've got up the courage to do CW on the HF bands, or CW period. I keep telling myself I'm going to go do that, and then I see the mic there. It's just too easy.
And I think it's got to be intimidating to get out with some of those folks who really have been doing this for years and years.
The CW portion, start copying CW, and then I'll realize, man, I'm so rusty. I don't know if I'm going to embarrass myself.
I'll give it a shot, and I guess there's a couple different ways to learn it. There seems to be a radio club in the northeast, New Jersey or someplace, that specializes in CW, and I hope to maybe get linked up with those guys and learn it through some of their techniques.
There's one of them. N6 CLX ready. ARRL has a code practice schedule. If you've got the ability to listen, you can use that.
That was me, Mike. Jim, N0TR. You mean you didn't copy that?
Hog watching TV.
Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Tom. I'm just going to say what my dad used to say. If you do, I'd speak to him in German when I was learning German in high school. He'd look at me and just say, if you do, you're going to clean it up.
That's my favorite saying when my daughter speaks that.
It's a pretty special gift there to be able to do that.
I just never could. It's beyond my scope. I tried a little German, but nein. No verstanden Sie.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch, KB4CBA.
Go ahead and make one, even though we know it probably won't be intelligible. Go ahead and make one.
Andy Gates.
Aren't they like in the group, don't they, Jim?
Was ist los? Diagonal.
Not a code because it's universal.
Music, isn't it?
Yes, it has a rhythm to it, and you're much better off if you had to been a musician, I think.
It's a universal language.
International Morse code is a universal language.
Nice for sunset than what we're getting this evening up here in the TR area.
I think Tom Doble with you on the first part. What was the first part?
I think it might have been Jim. Jim, why don't you take it?
I was going to say, KO4LAO for ID, that it's, we couldn't ask for a nicer sunset this evening here in, up in TR.
That was me just putting in my silly comment. I said, universal language, isn't that IP?
I thought Dave was in here too, but I thought I heard his voice. Yeah, we could speak binary code. Does anybody know how to do that?
Matter of fact, I do. Binary coded decimal.
Binary code, that's kind of a sort of a CW.
On the NCIS program that... The first one to come out, what's his name, Timothy McGee, the character is, him and his wife start talking in binary code to each other. It's really funny.
Now, pure binary and ones and zeros, that's rough. But binary coded decimal, we use that on our tape readers on the machine tools.
Zeros and ones.
Mainly 1, 2, 4, and 8.
I'm actually traveling over 5.
Station.
5 past 26, headed towards Greenville. There's a quite a wreck.
Fortunately, 85 is just a wreck looking for a place to happen.
Got a sign and run out and check on the chicken shear, but it's been a pleasure, and you be safe out there, and I'll just give my call sign here and then sign off because I can't remember everybody else's.
Tom, KP4CPA, Jim, go ahead and pick it up.
Yeah, thanks. We just had a little bit of excitement up here in the upper part of TR. A few ambulances and sirens going by here, so hopefully it's not something too bad. So, Mike, how's the traffic going?
LX Friday. Well, it's going good now. I'm on 85 going, 75. Past the wreck. It was just on an uphill swing where people were looking directly at the sun and not the cars next to them, I guess.
I'm going to sign off here and let you have a good drive home and hope things go safely for you. This is KO4LAO secure.
KO4LAO, N6CLX. I'll talk to you later. Am I the only one left now?
I'm me, KP4CBA. Name's David.
We've spoken before. Just didn't have a job that required commuting for the last 5 years, so now I'm here every day.
Gary? Yeah, I used to drive. I used to live in Traverse Rest, and I drove to the Motor Mile to what was then John Finger Mazda. It's now Bradshaw Mazda, but and it took me 35 minutes. I would go in early, real early, before they even opened. and beat the traffic, but coming home it took me 35 minutes to get home. And it was about a, supposed to be about a 15, 20 minute drive. And go ahead, Jerry.
You did. And I can't remember who else. I think Tom's gone. And is it, is Mike left or is that another car? That's the N6 gone.
N6CLX. Name is Mike.
I think we may have spoken before. Or David, you don't have to. You don't have to drive that far. You gonna go hit the ball this afternoon?
Just about. I don't know. It takes me around 13 to 15 minutes, depending on how I hit the lights.
Pausing. The car in front of me hit the brakes, and that's the cause for not wanting to talk.
David, it's nice. It's a nice afternoon for going. If you already been today, this first trip out.
Been working on my wife's car, this is my first time out in the courts today. Her battery cable bins were, terminals were corroded right there with the battery, and had factory ends on them, and I had to use all kinds of persuasion to get them off because they were both eat up with acid, and the battery is just puking acid everywhere. And I told her, I cleaned it all up, but I said, you know, it's just going to happen again. So I said, we might as well just replace the battery because it's just going to do it again. It was incredible. It was all over the place. I even had to take the battery tray out and clean it. And I've got this spray that eats up battery acid, and you just spray it on and it turns yellow. And if there's any battery acid there. And I was seeing a lot of yellow today.
N0TR.
I thought you were gone, KB4CBA.
Hi, Jerry. Dave, I had to go check the chicken shear a little bit. Timer tripped off out there. I put an MOV on it the other day, but apparently when I come out of the tin barn, it tripped when I flipped the switch. Dave, one thing you might want to do before you run another battery is check for overcharging. Check the open circuit voltage. And if that's way high, well, you know you got a regulator out, of course, and I know you're smart enough to do that. But if it's overcharging, it'll boil that battery.
I have not checked that. And that's a good, I'm glad you reminded me. But I kind of doubt it, although that could be going on. I tell you, I've seen a lot of batteries like this, though. And there wasn't an overcharge problem. It's just a battery leakage problem. And I don't know. Some batteries just, you know, they don't leak, and some do. I don't know. I guess it's the way they're made. I didn't pay that much attention to them. I just had to clean up the mess when I worked at the dealership.
Well, I just wanted to offer, and you know, 13.5 to 15 volts, and I'm certain you know that, but I have an amp probe that'll measure DC current up to 200 amps. If you ever need to borrow it, you're welcome.
And another thing I didn't check for, of course, I don't have any signs of a draw, but you can always check for a draw. I have a voltmeter with a milliamp gate setting, so you can check for a draw in point. I think it's 0.50 milliamps is acceptable. Anything above that, you need to be looking for something that's on when it shouldn't be on, when the switch is off. But anyway, the cars are fun to work on.
And you don't want to do it and forget about the trunk lid being open, the trunk light on, or the dome light on. Been there and done that. Well, Jerry, go ahead, and then I want to tell Dave a story that happened yesterday. This is in Gerald's yard.
The life of my cars is usually about 3 years, and that's normally it. I just go ahead and date them and know what the date is, and know I'm going to have to probably change them out. But yeah, David, I've had that happen one time or two over the years, and that's generally, it's generally just where the batteries are. And of course, this is a time before they had seal batteries. Everything's sealed now for the most part, and they get a tiny hairline crack in them sometimes, or something that just, you know, it just makes a big mess. But we always just use baking soda, baking powder, I guess, not soda, baking powder, just dumped it on there and neutralized it, just took a brush and scrubbed it off good. But I had one that had a battery train. It just about ate through it. That's been years and years ago. But that was when we had, just regular, the ones that had the caps on them, you had to keep the water in them. Of course, I very seldom check that. Go ahead either Tom or Mike. I'm not sure he's up next.
There, go ahead, and then I'll tell Dave this story that happened to my neighbor yesterday.
I don't want to be a party pooper and stop a story. It sounds like it might be good. Go ahead, N6CLX.
Well, Dave, and everybody else, my neighbor got a call from his daughter, and she likes to take off and just go anywhere. This has been day before yesterday, wasn't it, Bernice? Sunday. And so, in other words, nothing's available out there for her. And she's out in the sticks in Indiana in a small town outside of Indianapolis. So he had to go get a U-Haul trailer for a car. He has a big Dodge truck, holds about, I think it's 36 gallons or something. I don't remember. It's a huge tank, diesel. And so he takes out at 11 o'clock in the morning, and he didn't get back until yesterday, or day before yesterday at, what time was it? 2 o'clock Monday morning. And so he drove 15 hours round trip. But here's the one, Dave, I know you're very knowledgeable about automobiles, more so than me. But this is what was odd. They had all kinds of codes come up on there. And it's one of these ones with the push button like my Avalon is, and a key fob that you got to have in your pocket, of course, so it Bluetooths back and forth or however they do it there. So he gets home, and he starts checking, and he finds that the battery's dead in the key fob. Well, he goes down and buys two new batteries, puts a new battery in the key fob, comes back, pulls the negative terminal off the battery, and then left it off for momentarily and stuck it back on, and you know that car's run ever since. And when she was out on the highway, she's just a young girl and she don't know zip. And that car would not go over 10 miles an hour. Would you have thought that to have been the key fob, Dave? Over?
Oh, absolutely not. It's either, it's like a light switch. It's either on or off. Yeah, I've seen weak key fob batteries, and you didn't have the option of sticking a key in the ignition and starting it, and I held the key fob right up to the start button that you push, and the light was yellow, and it would turn green, and I started the car for him. But if it wouldn't go over 10 miles an hour, it's in what we call a limp mode. And usually that's caused by double footing the car. You have your foot on the gas and one on the brake, and you're pushing both of them at the same time, and you're giving the computer conflicting information. You're telling it to go, and you're telling it to stop at the same time. So it finally... It gets confused and it doesn't know which to do, so it just, you know, your power goes away and the car just basically almost shuts down because you're giving it conflicting information.
Well, I'll pass this on to Tim, because he is extremely knowledgeable, and his daughter's a little bit on the developmentally disabled side, not much, just a tiny bit, and so she was really upset about it, but not too learned when it comes to automobiles like that. It was a Toyota Yaris, matter of fact, but I'll pass that on the limp mode. And I can see where that might do it. I thought it would be the transducer from the foot feed or the throttle position sensor out there near the injection system or something. But it's run right ever since. And the battery was good in the car. But that's how he got it to reset all the codes and everything. No code showing now, and the car runs right on down the road. Go ahead, Jerry.
I said that yesterday, and I know that David, I was telling Tom that I had a Camry that the battery go dead on, and it creep along, and it just, well, even after I put a fruit, and I'm not talking about the fob battery, it didn't have a fob battery, not, you know, it was key to ignition, and the battery go dead on, and I did put a new battery in, and it took a while for it to, I get it to jump off, and then the guy that was at the shop would let me follow by. He let me follow behind him, and I could go about 15-20 miles an hour with the car stuttering, sputtering, going on. That was just a low battery deal, I guess. But it took it a while to put the fresh battery. It took it a while for it to learn everything back again. I think he actually reset anything or just put the new battery in and let it go at that. But I've had that happen a time. I'm not sure if that's what she was doing. I've never heard of that limp mode before, but that makes sense. I have to remember that.
Were you placing the battery in the key fob or in the car?
Battery in the car, not the key fob. Key fob just had the only battery in the key fob was one that worked the locks. It had a key to ignition. So that wasn't it, but the battery go dead. Yeah, the car battery go dead, and I'd get it replaced, and sometimes it just wouldn't work right until I could get jumped off long enough to get it to a shop or something. But on the way over there, it just creep along like that, or it stutter and speed up, slow down. It was just because of the battery voltage, I'm sure.
KB4CBA. Well, what happens, some cars are worse than others, but if you disconnect the battery and, you know, it would have taken him, you know, a minute or two to connect the other battery up, it loses its your PCM, which is the computer for the car, loses its RAM memory, and so what happens is all the input sensors that send signals to the computer, to the PCM, the PCM has to reset the parameters, and that's what the car was doing while it was poking along. It was trying to, you know, figure out, you know, what sensor, you know, what's its lowest setting, what's its highest setting, and so where should it be? And so you have to drive the car to get it to reset the RAM memory. But I was afraid I was going to lose, when I started my wife's car today, it shut off, and after it cranked up and it ran and it shut off, and I thought, oh crap, you know. And it has a key fob and push button. It has no ignition switch. But when the next time I pushed the button, it started up and ran. So I breathed a sigh of relief. But and I made sure her key fob would start it too. So cars are funny. They're just really funny. They just do weird things sometimes.
Me to say goodbye. I'm pulling into the drive. Yeah, my. I was telling Tom yesterday, my Jeep is doing some weird stuff. I got a CAN bus C out of performance on. I don't know why.
guy. He used to work on them.
Was doing Mike.
Got the, it threw me all the codes for the speed sensor in the rear wheel, and then my reader told me that's what it was. So I changed it. Everything was fine, reset it, but it's still putting on the traction control light, and it's throwing me a code U0000, I think it's 2, for CAN bus C is out of performance. Of course, I can't find out anything more.
So what'd you do, Google that online? Of course you did online. That's what I do. I Google stuff because, you know, some stuff I don't have a clue. The traction control light, if it's on, see that, gosh, that affects your ABS. And of course, your speed sensor affects your ABS too, because it's looking, ABS is looking at all that through the PCM. So, I tell you, cars are, they're so smart, sometimes I think they're a little bit too smart.
You know, if it gets me to work and it gets me home and it still gets the same mileage, I don't care anymore. I think I'm just going to invest in a sleeve of stickers. I'm going to put some stickers over the light.
Oh, I worked on a car where a lady put some electrical tape over the dash where the check engine light was so she didn't have to see it. Over the instrument cluster, it was so funny. Well, I gotta go, guys. I got a tennis game in 15 minutes, and so I need to get down there and warm up. 73s, and go ahead, I guess, Tom, pick it up and enjoy it. Y'all have a good evening. KP4CPA.
I'm going to jump in here to say goodbye, guys. N6CLX, I'm clear. I'm going to go in and get some dinner.
73's, Mike. Nice hearing you this evening. It's 61 degrees, Dave. And I think some of that stuff, Mike, is proprietary information when you get into it that deep. So you might not find that. Go ahead, Jerry.
Good afternoon. And we'll talk to you guys later. Yeah, Tom, I think some of that stuff, they don't want you to know how to reset those codes or what it's related to, because it is, I mean, that's a money-making proposition, put one of those things on a machine.
This is N0TR. Well, Jerry, I got to go in a little bit. I was reading a thing in Consumers Reports today about people buying higher-end cars than they normally would, like a Lexus or a BMW or something of that nature. And they were talking about these dealers, they'll play down the price and give you a real good deal on them. And I'm not saying they're dishonest. I'm sure there's some that is and some that isn't. But the reason being is that the repairs on them, like, for example, I've seen where a BMW, I think it was X3 or something, it was like $1,500 and some for a starter or a water pump, or several thousand dollars on the Lexus and that. And one of the reasons being is they put so many extras on these vehicles of that type that you got to disassemble a lot of other things to get to it. It's like Tim was telling me next door here, and he's a very fine mechanic. Some lady at work had a Mercedes, and the battery was it was either behind the back seat or in the trunk, and there was no way to jump it to get her going. And she had to call a dealership to get them out there. And I know my son-in-law told me he had to replace a battery cable on my daughter's BMW convertible. It's an older one. And she drives it in the summer up there in Michigan. I think he said they wanted $450 for the battery cable. And he went down and bought one for, I don't know, $30, $40. It wasn't too bad. but more than you'd think. But that's the reason they give you such a bargain on them at times, because if something does go wrong, it's exceedingly higher to repair that type of vehicle.
Repair parts department and repair centers are that's a big profit center for dealers. And it is on every dealer. And you can go to some of these other shops, and some of them can do the same work, and some of them really don't have the ability or the knowledge to work on them. There was this guy here in Anderson worked on Mercedes for my father-in-law for years, and his prices were not very expensive at all, but the parts were like I think when he had replaced some of the spark plugs, it was like spark plugs, they seemed like $100 a piece or something, some ridiculous thing. I mean, it was crazy. And but his labor rates weren't that high. There's, like I said, there's a guy in Greenville that works on most Japanese cars. He does a good job. He's a good bit cheaper. But as you said, we got a much nicer car this time than we've gone in the past, because we don't know whether we'll buy another car. We don't know how much longer we'll be driving, so we don't know if we'll have another car for, say, our cars usually last 8 or 10 years at least, so we don't know if we'll buy another car. And the expenses are on Hondas and their Camrys, and they're not bad unless you have to replace something major with them, but these premium brands like Mercedes and BMW and, of course, Porsche and some of the other more expensive brands, they're a lot more expensive to operate.
Oh, yeah. No question. And they did mention Porsche in there, the Cayenne and different ones. And my nephew that is a pilot for American Airlines, he has two Porsches out there in Colorado. One SUV, I think, and one sports car. I can't imagine it, but he can afford it. He's single and flies 787s. I don't know why in the world he'd want that, but I guess up there in Colorado it'd be a lot of fun in the mountains. But it's a good way to wind up dead, too, speeding up there. But he's very down-to-earth, so I doubt if he gets hurt in one. But they are exorbitant. And they said exactly what you did. Some of the places that are good shops just don't have the proprietary equipment to work on those type of cars, so you got to be careful where you go. And I know changing spark plugs in this Avalon, I think you got to take a little bit of the intake manifold off to get back to that last one on the left side. Never did have it done, but at 100,000 miles they recommend it, those iridium spark plugs. But that was back when we had another Avalon. And we've had four of them, and that one had a little over 100,000 on it, but didn't really need it. But I'm good about preventative maintenance. Jerry, I gotta let you go, and my foot's hurting dreadfully bad. I'm gonna go up to take a shower. As we always said back in Kansas in the Navy, we were headed to the rain locker. So I'll let you go on your final, and it's been nice chatting with you this evening. There's a lot of knowledgeable guys on here, and it makes it a pleasure. Infor DJC. Did I get that right, Jerry? This is NZLTR 73. Be clear on your final.
I've enjoyed it as usual, and we'll talk again tomorrow, I suppose. We'll be talking to you. I got a replacement mic coming from one of the radios. I can get it back on there. I was going to rewire one, but I thought it took me a long time to figure out which way I went to which pin and which one was which when I replaced it. But anyway, I think I got it figured out now. Have a good evening. Good talking to you. We'll see you later. N4DJC, clear.